Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. Funny thing about being fast, you end up waiting a lot. First to show up, first in line, then just waiting. Me, I rev up Chumba Casino. With over 200 social casino games, no slow lanes here. Why sit around when you can spin? I'm already racing. Your turn. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. That's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi there, my name's Andy.
And my name's Anna.
And we are two of the four hosts of the podcast No Such Thing as a Fish. We present every week the most amazing, wonderful, insane, hilarious, bizarre facts you've ever heard.
Facts like, did you know America has a national grocery bag packing competition?
Did you know, Anna, the company Volkswagen sells more sausages than it does cars?
Yes, we've got those two facts and about a billion more in our podcast archives for you to listen to. We chat about them, we laugh about them, we make the occasional terrible pun.
It's great fun. It's called No Such Thing as a Fish. Why don't you listen now?
So, we currently exist in what I'm liking to refer to as the global culture blender. Some people have called it globo homo, or global homogenization, as some say, which is just the idea that mainly a lot of the Western countries, or the westernized countries, are all starting to resemble each other. A lot of people are pointing out that this is probably due to the influence of outside and insidious actors like the World Economic Forum, who definitely have a part to play. But a lot of the elites just across the world are all in sync with this. And that is probably because of all of the Build Back Better initiatives and those sorts of things. And it is mainly happening in the West as well, because, you know, you want to test drive it in the West first before you can export it to Africa, for instance. I don't think they're going to have much success over there, which means that we're all the global guinea pigs.
I imagine China's a hotspot as well, because telling them to eat the bugs, you don't need to tell them twice, do you?
No, you didn't need to tell them in the first place. They'll just do it happily. No. But speaking of Africa, funnily enough, Connor and I have recently done a review on the politics of Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, which was a truly dreadful film that nobody should have to sit through. It's almost 3 hours. Connor, happily, had to catch a train before the film ended, so he got to leave partway through, whereas I and our editor, Jack, were forced to sit through the rest of it, and it was pretty unbearable.
My condolences.
And once again, you're not going to be surprised at this, the overarching message of it was, Europeans bad, white man bad, brown person and black person need to team up to beat whitey, except obviously beat whitey, in this context, could be interpreted as genocide whitey. But that's just my interpretation of it as somebody who never owned a slave, never engaged in the slave trade. As far as I'm aware, have no immediate relatives who have done either of those things either. But on the potential that some of my ancestors might have done, that means my entire culture and civilization deserves to be wiped off the face of the earth.
Seems reasonable.
Yeah, but getting back to our culture being wiped off the face of the earth, one of the things that they like to do is stop you from eating meat, because in the climate initiatives that every single country is going through, meat is a big producer of carbon dioxide, or at least the farming that you need to do to get meat is a big producer of carbon dioxide. So in the interest of reducing all of our carbon footprints, we need to stop eating meat. And some places are doing this a little bit more forcefully than others. Obviously, one of the things they like to do is nudge all of us. But when it turns out that nudging isn't always great for getting people to stop doing certain behaviors, they'll just force you. At the end of the day, they will just use the power of the state, the power of anything that they can get their hands on to do so. And that started to happen in lots of schools where Breitbart are reporting on the Great Reset, an outrage as an entire German city, not just one school, but a city, is forcing meatless meals on elementary school children, which is not good. I don't think that children...
It's going to harm their development, isn't it? In
all likelihood, yeah.
You need meat and enough protein to grow properly.
Yeah.
That much is...
Are you going to be
removing
dairy products from the children as well? Because obviously some are lactose intolerant, but I still enjoy a good glass of milk. And as a child, having lots of milk is really good for the development of your bones and getting all your calcium in.
I like to think that it's why I have good teeth that have never had to have any dental work done to them.
Yeah, it's really good for that as well. So this is the German city of Freiburg, which is a kind of an ironic name as well, because I like a good fry-up and these people won't let you, with the authorities mandating vegetarian-only menus from 2023. So The entire city is complicit in what I would refer to as child abuse. In order to simplify the processing of meals from ordering to servings, only one menu will be offered at primary schools and municipal daycare centres from the 2023-24 school year, said the document detailing the decision. Since the intersection, and that's a word that sends a chill down my spine these days, of different eating habits is a vegetarian offer, I don't know if this is just like autistic German being translated into English poorly, or if this is just a nonsense sentence, because I don't know how the intersection of different eating habits means. Do they mean that vegetables tend to be a part of every man's diet? And therefore, therefore, we might as well just get rid of everything but the vegetables.
They've not met you then, but yeah. you insist on not eating vegetables.
Hey, potatoes count. All right, potatoes count. The menu line should be vegetarian in the future. And then it cites the high cost of meat as being another reason to implement the ban. So it's because they're money grubbers, basically. They don't want to spend as much money on meat. So just here's some substitute. Eat your broccoli. There you go. That's all you need. Healthy growing boy, all you need is broccoli. Many parents have taken to social media to vent their frustration at the decision. Big surprise. With even the Ministry of Agriculture in Stuttgart, the capital of the state within which Freiburg resides, taking issue with the decision. Well, yeah, because I think a lot of people do have issues with an entire city deciding their children's dietary requirements rather than the parents themselves. But this seems to be a recurring theme throughout the Western world right now, which is schools and states and authorities taking parents' decisions into their own hands. Not something I support. According to Der Spiegel, while officials in the ministry did say that reducing meat consumption for many children would be far from inappropriate, Germans' youth should ultimately be allowed to decide for themselves what food they do or do not eat. Well,
John's drawn our attention to the fact that they're trying to
hide the article.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. This sort of thing always happens, doesn't it, sadly?
Yeah, look at Google trying to more or less mislead people. Just like, yeah, don't trust the evidence.
Elon, you know what you need to do. You know what you need to do.
It's also worth saying that I think meat should be a human right. I mean, to quote that kid from that meme, bacon is good for me.
It is. It actually is.
And in fact, recently, I think it was John posted something that I saw that suggested that actually new research has suggested that red meat isn't nearly as bad for you and it might actually be good for you.
No, there were lots of studies done a while ago talking about people with red meat who eat more red meat had greater heart problems and pulmonary conditions. Mm-hmm. But I think in those particular studies, they hadn't controlled for just the rest of those people's lifestyle. They had literally just gone, oh, you eat more red meat and you have more heart conditions. Well, that just means that there's a correlation.
But anyone who eats more of anything are going to be more likely to have heart conditions, because if you just eat more food than everyone else, then of course.
Also, they weren't controlling for whether these people, you know, smoked, any other bad behavior that they were engaged in, if they had pre-existing heart conditions or anything like that. They just saw that correlation and went, okay, maybe I'm misrepresenting the studies themselves, but that's certainly how the media reported on it. Because you know how the media loves to take tiny little bit statistic and turn it into front page headline news. That's why you've got, I remember back in the day, there was the hilarious Daily Mail would put on the front cover one day on the front page, chocolate will help you cure your cancer. And then the next day it would be chocolate found to be leading cause of cancer. That's just how these things roll, sadly. However, similar actions have been taken in other European cities, with one council in the UK voting last year to serve vegan-only meals at its events. Pushed through by a coalition of left-wing Green and Liberal Democrat politicians, imagine my shock, in Oxfordshire, the move has greatly annoyed many rural voters within the region with ties to livestock farming. And this is not surprising if anybody watched Clarkson's Farm, and if you haven't, you absolutely should. It's brilliant. Oxford is a region that has lots of farms in it. Mm-hmm. And I imagine a lot of those people are making a living and barely scraping by, because farming is not exactly a lucrative business, through livestock farming. If, for instance, you've got wool, because you've got sheeps and some of the sheeps, that's not how you say it, it's just sheep, that's the plural. If you've got a lot of sheep, say that there
sheepses.
Are some... Yeah, the sheepses. If the... What was displayed in that show, if the sheep aren't able to give birth to more sheep and therefore they're not particularly profitable for you, you can sell them off to the slaughterhouse and you get a bit of money for that, and you also get a delicious meal at the end of it. Another school in Britain, meanwhile, provoked outrage among parents when it decided to ban all meat offerings on its school lunch menu, a move the principal said was in order, well, the head teacher, because we're English, said was in order to lower the carbon footprint of students. Sorry, that's not your decision to make. Parents were also requested to refrain from giving their students meat within their packed lunches for the sake of saving the environment. Now, that's just a piss thing. That's just an absolute... You're taking the mickey, mate, right there. Meanwhile, children in the Netherlands have been fed mealworms as part of lessons about food sustainability. I wonder where they got that idea from. Meatsy boogs.
I'm pretty sure mealworms are what some of my food eats, like chickens. Feed that to chickens, then I eat the chickens. That's how it works.
Yeah, whatever nutrients are good from the mealworms are transferred to me through the chicken, which is something that's much less disgusting to eat. And they give the reason for this as being children are less inhibited towards eating bugs. Students as young as 10 were given lessons on alternative forms of protein, which oftentimes just means much lower quality protein because you've got the amino acids within protein and not all protein is the same quality, whereas generally red meat and chicken are full of good protein. Bugs, I doubt.
I'm surprised they didn't try this at a preschool because, of course,
you get the weird kid eating worms. Yeah, they see that and you go, see this guy? He's the inspiration. You should all take after him.
Yeah, that weird kid who ate worms is now, supposedly, according to the global elites, leading the way in dietary.
He's a young global leader for the World Economic Forum. That's what it is. He's penetrating the Canadian cabinet as we speak.
Titled That Kid That Ate Worms.
You've got like Maoist portraits of him with a bunch of worms hanging out of his mouth.
He's basically a hero.
Yeah, so some of these children were reportedly being brought on field trips in virtual reality to a meatless burger factory.
And so, that's the most dystopian sentence I've heard in quite some time.
I know, so this is just brainwashing the kids. And obviously you could make the argument that yes, when we push certain values on children, whether they be Western values or whatever, in schools and at home, yeah, we are brainwashing them to a certain extent. But I like to think we're brainwashing them with good and virtuous things that have experience and tradition behind them that we know are good because they've lasted us for thousands of years. This is bad brainwashing. This is very bad brainwashing. But once again, this reminds me of something, which is the World Economics Forum's very public and very out there initiatives to try and stop people eating meat. And this is where the nudge aspect comes into it. So they use the argument at the beginning of this article saying that meat and dairy is 14.5% of global greenhouse gas emissions. So that means they're bad. Mm-hmm. Just in case you read that and think, okay, I don't care. No, you need to understand that means they're bad, which means that people need to be nudged in the right direction.
It's probably worth clarifying what nudge theory is, the underlying psychological theory that you're talking about here, which is more or less, it relies on a cue which prompts people to have thoughts and ideas that are salient with the ends in which the government wants you to do. So, for example, having some eyes next to a bin or something might make you more likely to put your rubbish in the bin because the prompt of the eyes makes you feel like you're being watched and therefore you're more focused on being pro-social in your activities, which, you know, I mean, I support putting rubbish in the bin, but it's an entirely different moral question of whether the government should be forcing you to do stuff. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, that was an interesting thing reading Jonathan Haidt's The Righteous Mind, as he pointed out that if you put pictures of eyes in public places, like you say, people are more likely to behave pro-socially and tidy up after themselves, less likely to fight each other because, like you say, it feels like there's an authority figure watching them. You have to have a trade-off there, which is, do you want to live in the kind of society that has that oppressive nudging towards you, that makes you feel like you've got the entire weight of the authorities bearing down on your back?
Because a lot of the nudges that you get in the modern day, they're two ends that I agree with, but it's just the method that I don't agree with. So getting people to eat more healthily, to exercise more, not to steal bicycles, not to litter.
Yeah, for me, the method and a lot of the aims are wrong. The method's messed up and dystopian, and a lot of the aims, if it comes to basically just brainwashing people into not eating meat and also just generally not doing things that are good for them, then I have major disagreements.
There are some perverse incentives involved in how it's being implemented today, and I've actually done an entire podcast talking about it on the website.
Oh, which one?
It is a contemplations talking about how the government manipulates you.
Yeah, I bet that's really interesting. So you should check that out. But here's an example of the nudge theory in practice, because they did a study. So researchers at the WRI asked 6,000 meat eaters to choose options from an online menu. Participants in the control group got a normal menu, while others were offered prompts that asked them to consider eating less meat. The subtle interventions are derived from a branch of behavioral science that we've just described called nudge theory. And the messages were built around a number of themes, including the nudges below. Health and environment. You will be surprised at how much positive impact plant-based food can have on both the planet and your health. Choose plant-based dishes to lower your carbon footprint and improve nutrition. It's about goodness for you and the planet. So this is all pretty blatant stuff. But if you're looking at the menu, oftentimes you've kind of got your brain only half switched on. You're mainly thinking, oh, what do I want to eat? And you've got all of these messages surrounding every choice on the menu. It might actually do its job and push you towards certain options that you wouldn't have gone towards otherwise. And the interesting thing here is I think I'm very dubious on this supposed science that's been done to show that a purely plant-based diet is really good for you, because I've met vegetarians and vegans, and I think the proof is in the pudding.
You just need to use your eyes. That's the only science that I really apply when I look at diets. Like, you look at people who are fruititarians, for example, who are vegans that only eat fruit, and they look emaciated and ill. They look like they're dying.
Yeah, it's hard to make me feel bad for a leftist, but those people, I do feel, it's like that episode of Futurama where you've got the hippies who say they've trained a lion to be a vegetarian and the lion is starving and depressed, coughing up bits of apple core. It's just not nice to see, is it? And joining the movement, 90% of Americans are making the change to eat less meat. So this is encouraging you, like, it's social nudging, the idea that you don't want to be the odd man out, do you? You don't want to be the weirdo. You don't want to be Jimmy eating worms by himself. Or you want to join Jimmy and his gang eating worms. There you go. Join this growing movement and choose plant-based dishes to have less impact on the climate and are kinder to the planet. Small changes, big impact. Here's another one. Each of us can make a positive difference for the planet. Swapping just one meat dish for a plant-based one saves greenhouse gas emissions that are equivalent to the energy used to change your phone for 2 years. Your small change can make a big difference. And also, they say at the end here, the results from the trial show a dramatic rise in the selection of non-meat options by those who are nudged to make healthier and more sustainable choices, as the chart below illustrates. And you can show the chart just so you can see it.
Implicit in that, sorry.
Carry on.
Is that you can charge your phone for 2 years for very little energy. Because having one meat dish, I don't think the carbon impact or the environmental damage is particularly significant. So they're kind of admitting that lots of the daily usage of electricity is really not that harmful. Sorry, I threw you off a bit.
No, that's a very good point. And I would say to all of this, just if you see something like this, just be aware of these tactics that they'll try and push on you. Because if you find a menu like this, I know how I would respond is I would find the meatiest dish on there and order three of it just to really show them where I'm at.
Just get a party meat platter just to yourself. Get a full Ron Swanson.
They're also... I want all of the meat. Now, you may have thought when I said that, I mean some meat or a lot of meat. No, all of the meat. That's what I'm after. And one of the other things they're trying to do, of course, is push the whole in boog eating, 5 reasons why eating insects could reduce climate change. And so here's some of the reasons that they give for you and why it's actually very good. Scroll back up for a second, John. Does that look appetizing?
I'm hungry already. I just see ant and I think, that's dinner.
I just pour some salt on that and just no preparation needed. I am English after all. I don't need spices. I just like me plain meat and potato ants, I do. Just like mum used to serve. So the reasons that they give for why it's actually very good for you, and I'm going to go very North FC here, just so you know. So number one, edible insects can produce equivalent amounts of quality protein when compared to animals. don't care. Don't like them. Number two, insects require less care and upkeep than livestock.
That's probably not even true, is it?
Probably not. I mean, but also, I don't care. I don't like them.
I imagine that an insect needs a more controlled environment, probably indoors, to farm them, whereas a cow, you can just stick them outside, give them some food, they'll be right as rain.
Yeah, put them in a semi-natural habitat, almost. Number three, we're actually running out of protein, apparently.
I
don't think that's true.
I've got a massive bag of protein powder, so I think that that's probably not the case.
We can actually produce powder that contains protein. I don't think we're running out of it anytime soon. Number four, insects are part of a virtuous eco-cycle. Do you want to be a virtuous and kind man? Do you want to be among the chivalrous order of knights like your ancestors were? Eat bugs.
I'm kind to insects because I eat their predators.
Exactly. There you go. See? We're making the world a better place. And number five, you can start small and work your way up. So that's just saying you'll get over the disgust barrier eventually. just have a spider leg. Here you go. And then we can work your way up to a full cockroach.
You go from ant to tarantula.
Yeah. But lots of people have noticed what's going on with the World Economic Forum and how pervasive they seem to be. You've got people like Ron Paul giving speeches on this. And Ron Paul was a congressman for how many years? Almost 40 years.
Ages, yeah.
You've got people in, I think, certain districts in the Canadian government are just outright saying, no, I'm not going to take part in anything the World Economic Forum does. I'm not going to take part in any of their initiatives. We need to cut ties with them. I think Ron DeSantis has been saying that the companies who operate out of Florida need to abandon ESG scores, which are tied to BlackRock, but the CEO of BlackRock is on the board of the World Economic Forum, so their goals are aligned with one another. We've got some noticing here where one of the things that people notice is that Klaus Schwab, the head of the World Economic Forum, and somebody like Bill Gates, who I think you could probably describe as a crypto globalist, is a good term for him, always appear at these global political meetings like G20. This year, there was G20 and B20, which I think Connor will have covered on the podcast by the time this goes out. But Klaus Schwab was at B20, which is the leader meeting of global business leaders, and was giving a speech on how we need global governance. There was that interesting video, I forget who it was. I think it was also at B20 that was going out on YouTube saying, we need a new world order. And then in the description, it said, misinformation, there is no such plan as a new world order.
But they're literally saying it. I wanted to just shake my laptop screen.
It's
just like,
blatant.
I can see it, it's there.
But people like Klaus Schwab and Bill Gates are able to go to these meetings and rub shoulders with global leaders. Here's a picture of Klaus Schwab with Jacinda Ardern, who is not a particularly reputable character, as far as I'm concerned. Remember when she was asked in whether her COVID initiatives were to create a two-tier society? Like, an incredulous question. You're not trying to create a two-tier society, are you? And she just smiled and said, yes, I am. Interesting tactics. We've got people in Australia pointing out as well, this politician who's a man called Malcolm Roberts, who's a senator for Queensland with One Nation, seems like a good guy, talking to the parliament in Australia, just demanding to know why World Economic Forum penetration of cabinets, which is the very infamous clip of Klaus Schwab saying, we have penetrated the cabinets, which doesn't sound like a thing an evil supervillain would say all.
A German who's got world control plans and is born in Ravensburg, he's not evil, is he?
There's so many mimetic qualities that I'm born in Ravensburg. It might as well be born in Evilville.
I mean, his...
I'm from Baddie Town.
His university uniform as well makes him look like Palpatine from Star Wars.
That's giving him too much credit. Palpatine is far more entertaining.
Well, that's true.
But this man, Malcolm Roberts, was asking why this kind of infiltration of the government hasn't triggered a national security alert in Australia. And it's probably because, sadly, Malcolm, a lot of the people you rub shoulders with are likely on the payroll.
But it's also a Labour government in Australia. And if he's One Nation, he's probably not supportive of them.
No, he's not. But we're all trying to push back against the Great Reset, as they call it. And one of the other things that goes on with global homogenization or this global culture blender is that you may have noticed going from city to city, if you travel around a lot across the world, all of the major cities are becoming more and more the same. gigantic, infested, multicultural places with these horrible grey and glass blocks jutting out into the sky. There's no sense of place. There's no sense of tradition or heritage in them. They all feel like they've been centrally planned by the same group of people.
They're like human termite mounds, ironically.
Yes, and you even see in Saudi Arabia there are plans to literally just build a wall across the border and make... just put a city in the wall.
We're going to build a wall and make the people live in it.
I mean, I have seen it suggested that maybe if Trump gets in 2024, that's what he should do. He should suggest that we'll build the wall, but we'll put a city in it and all Democrats can just go live there. You can all live in your human ant maze and all the rest of us normal people can, you know, live normal lives. It's the best of both worlds.
This isn't a serious suggestion, but you could just build a wall city at the border and just say, well, you're only allowed to live in this city. You can come in here, but you've got to protect against the others.
That's a good point. Yeah, there you go. You can invite your family and friends in, you know, if you've got space for it. But, I mean, space isn't something you'd be worried about, is it? You know, that's not a factor that you have to worry about. But this article is interesting because it's talking about how the global megacities are just becoming more and more similar. And once again, when we point it out, that means we're evil conspiracy theorists. But when the elites and their magazines and publications point it out, it's a good thing and everyone should be for it. And it ends with this rather dystopian vision saying, in the future, we will no longer think of cities simply as distinct physical hubs in a rural landscape, but as patterns of digital movement, crisscrossing over the planet over many scales from the megacity down to the local neighborhood. Boundaries will no longer have the same meaning as they did before the first industrial revolution in Britain in 1830. And I really want to invoke Uncle Ted here, because if you're tracing all of this development back to the industrial revolution, perhaps it was a disaster for humanity. The consequences we could not foresee.
I also like that they've shrouded it in like international art English. Where it's so jargony, and just the way in which they're saying it, just you can tell that they don't have good intentions.
No, of course not. I mean, do you want to be in a place where boundaries don't have the same meaning as they used to? And that just means that I can be spied on at any point. This is the whole you will own nothing and be happy mindset. And why are they doing this? Well, one of the reasons they might be doing is this because they know that there's a certain strength in numbers, and the more isolated and atomized we are from one another, the more we have to rely on the entertainment provided by companies and the services provided by the state. The less independent we are, the less likely we are to form political blocs that are able to oppose them, the less likely we are to be able to develop elites within our own circles that can go up against them. And one of the interesting consequences of a lot of the modern ailments that we're part of, that we suffer from, is that sadly, sperm counts globally are plummeting. And it's, you know, this sounds like it could be a joke, but it's actually very true and it's very alarming. And we should all be worried about it, because one of the things that goes along with this is that I think testosterone levels across men across the world are dropping as well.
I think the most convincing reason for this that I've seen is that it's the pesticides we use on our crops.
Yeah.
So I, of course, that this is going to be in meat as well, because of we feed the animals in which we eat, the crops in which we don't eat. So
yeah, that's what they say here, is that sperm count globally dropped more than half between 1973 and 2018. And some of the reasons that they were saying that it is because of pesticides, and they say as well, though the reasons for the drop were not discussed in the paper, scientists have known for decades certain environmental factors like exposures to pesticides, as you said, and other endocrine disrupting chemicals like, this is a science word, so you might have to help me here, phthalates and polychlorinated biphenyls, or PCBs, can have impacts on reproductive health. And they also say diet, activity level, and stress may also play a role. And I do think that we should also pay attention to the diet, activity level, and stress, because a lot of people have very poor diets. A lot of people are very slovenly nowadays. I mean, look at obesity levels in America. And then also we're And we're all really stressed as well, constantly, because we're lurching from crisis to crisis. You're never allowed to just sit back and relax. You're never allowed to just take a moment of peace. You always got to be angry about the next thing. You've always got to be stressed about the next thing. And this is a way of control, because if you can't have kids, if you literally physically can't have kids, because this is the sort of thing that generations will have to go by before sperm counts are back to what they used to be, well, you've got no family. You've got nothing tying you down. You've got no commitments. You've got no responsibility. You're in a state of perpetual adolescence, which means that you are much easier to control. We are literally becoming physically weaker as this goes by, and we need to stand up to this stuff, or we will just be a subjugated serf class for the rest of history.
If you appreciated that segment from the podcast of the Lotus Eaters, you can go to lotuseaters.com to get access to all the premium content we have on the site, such as the Contemplation series, this one on the origin of humanity, part two. If you'd like to find out what else we're putting out, you can follow us on Getter at lotuseaters_com on Getter. Thank you and goodbye.
Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here, and you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi there, my name's Andy.
And my name's Anna.
And we are two of the four hosts of the podcast No Such Thing as a Fish. We present every week the most amazing, wonderful, insane, hilarious, bizarre facts you've ever heard.
Facts like, did you know America has a national grocery bag packing competition?
Did you know, Anna, the company Volkswagen sells more sausages than it does cars?
Yes, we've got those two facts and about a billion more in our podcast archives for you to listen to. We chat about them, we laugh about them, we make the occasional terrible pun.
It's great fun. It's called No Such Thing as a Fish. Why don't you listen now?